Well, I read a lot about specific ballet dancers who lived in the Victorian period. I was kind of shocked how little money they were able to make, and most of them were washerwomen on the side or, you know, some other profession. They were very poor, and if they were ever going to make it in ballet, they had to have somebody sponsoring them.
We'll talk about this and much more today. Welcome to a Writer's Day podcast. Hello and welcome to my podcast. My name is Ruth Douthit and I'm an award-winning author of books for middle grade readers. And I started this podcast a few years ago because I love to talk about all things writing. And I especially enjoy interviewing published authors about their writing journey, their books, and much more. So welcome. If you like what you hear, please consider following me on Spotify, Instagram, and even my author Facebook page. You can also sign up for my newsletter at my website at artbyruth.com. If you sign up for my newsletter, you'll be among the first to hear about my newest release, The Road to Home, a story about a young girl dealing with grief, the loss of her mother, the move to a small town, and she befriends an abandoned dog who is also coping from the loss of his family, and together they help each other get through the hard times. Coming soon this month, The Road to Home. Ah, the ballet. I don't know about you, but my love affair with the ballet began when I was 10 years old, and I saw the movie The Turning Point. And then each year my mom and I would get all dressed up, go out for dinner, and then go see the Nutcracker Suite together. That was our tradition for many years. I knew I could never be a ballerina. I was way too tall, but that didn't stop me from dreaming about it. I love everything about the ballet, the artistry, the discipline, the beauty of the sets, the scene designs, and of course the music to go along with it. So when I saw that this author set her newest book in the ballet theater, I was immediately drawn in. The cover's beautiful, the story's beautiful, and so I reached out to see if she could join me on my podcast. She is the award-winning author of Lady Jane Disappears, A Rumored Fortune, Finding Lady Enderley, and The Love Note. She loves tales that capture the colorful, exquisite details in ordinary lives and is eager to hear anyone's story. She lives with her husband and their children in a house in the woods near Lake Michigan. I was honored to be able to interview Joanna Davidson-Politano here on my podcast. So you know the drill. Grab your favorite beverage, a comfortable chair, kick back and relax as we listen to Joanna tell us about her newest book, A Midnight Dance.
Hello and welcome to my podcast. I'm really excited today to have author Joanna Davidson-Politano to talk about her new book. Okay, when I was about 10 years old, I saw Turning Point and then I saw the Nutcracker Suite. So ballet really has influenced my art and my life. I just love it. So I am thrilled to have her with us to talk to us about A Midnight Dance. So welcome, Joanna.
Hi, I'm really glad to be here.
This is great. So I usually just have my authors, when they are on my podcast, tell us a little bit about themselves, their writing journey, and then we'll talk about your book. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I worked for a pharmaceutical company as a medical writer for many years. And then I worked for a small Christian publisher. And then I left the workforce to raise my babies when I started having kids. And I have always written novels and short stories and things like that for fun. But I didn't really delve into the publishing of these things until I started having kids and I was a stay-at-home mom.
Wonderful. You have an award-winning book, Lady Jane Disappears and A Rumored Fortune. Why did you choose this genre instead of fantasy adventures or...
Well, honestly, it wasn't something I set out to do. I started writing World War II, a few other different, like turn of the century type books and things like that, and submitted for publication and got nowhere. And so then when my baby started coming, I just decided I would write for fun and nobody would ever read it, and I didn't care. And so the story that really grabbed me was about a novelist who was writing in secret about the people around her in her household, and nobody knew who was writing about them. And that story just was like fascinating to me. And so I just sat down and thought maybe it'll be a chapter, maybe it'll be a short story. And it ended up being a full-length novel and the first one that was contracted.
Oh, that's great. How did you like the query process, you know, of trying to find an agent and then a publisher? How did that go for you?
Well, I went to different conferences and I pitched for several years before I had kids. And I got a few nibbles, but nothing solid, and a bunch of silence, a bunch of crickets. So, you know, I kind of backburnered the idea of being published for a while and decided, you know, I'd focus on raising my babies and stuff like that. And God decided that that was exactly the time that I would get published. So I went to one final conference and I pitched to three different agents, and they all offered representation, two of them on the spot. And so then I chose an agent, and she submitted to publishing houses, and I had three offers from publishing houses after, you know, absolutely nothing for several years. It was kind of a shock, but it was really fun.
Oh, that is great. What a success story. But it didn't happen overnight, did it?
No, and honestly, it only happened when God decided it was time.
Exactly. And sometimes he has, you know, that great sense of humor. I mean, here you had your children you were raising, and then he decides to have it all come true, right?
I know. I had all this free time before I had kids. Like, all my evenings were free and everything. And of course, it all got piled on at once, but that's okay.
That's okay. Oh, that's great. Congratulations on your success.
And, well, thank you.
These awards and your wonderful books. So now we are going to talk about A Midnight Dance. So tell us a little bit about the story, and then what made you want to write this story about the ballet?
So this story came about when my oldest child was about 4 years old and fell madly in love with ballet. I had zero experience in ballet. I knew very little about it. I'm not super coordinated, so it was never something I was good at doing. But I thought it would be really fun to write a book about something that she was passionate about and kind of go through some of the steps together. So we went to live performances, and I fell absolutely in love with live ballet. And my daughter was completely smitten, even more so than before, once I started taking her to the live ballets. And I spent almost a full year researching the history of ballet in Victorian England, and just kind of compiling my understanding of it. Mm-hmm. And then I set out to write it. I dedicated it to my daughter as well. Aww. And I just found so much life and color and just vivid beauty in these live performances. And so I tried to bring all of that into my novel as well as I wrote.
What's your daughter's name?
Her name's Elena.
Elena. Oh, that's wonderful. And your little boy, just so you all know, you can probably hear him cooing, but Joanna just had a baby 2 weeks ago. And what's your little boy's name?
My youngest one is Oliver.
Oliver. So it's neat mm-hmm. to hear him on the recording.
Yes, he is sleeping in my arms, but making all the little baby noises.
That's precious, though. Well, that's neat. So when Elena took up ballet, you didn't have much to do with it. What was it? What was the very first live ballet performance that you took her to?
We saw Sleeping Beauty put on by the Russian Ballet.
Oh, wow.
And I was not sure how a four-year-old would do. I thought, okay, she loves ballet in theory, but she's not going to sit through it. She's going to be interested for about, you know, 8 seconds, and then she's going to be, okay, let's go home. But no, she was riveted. She sat there and just, with her mouth hanging open, and soaked it in for the full, I don't know, two and a half hours that it went on. And she just loved it. And she was asking me questions about the storyline and trying to piece it together. And she was absolutely fascinated. So we just kept going about maybe twice a year three times a year to different performances.
Oh, fantastic. My mom and I would always go to the Nutcracker starting when I was 10. And so that was
wonderful.
Yeah, that was a magical moment between us. We'd go out to dinner first and then go get all dressed up and then go to the ballet. So yeah, that's wonderful that you're starting you're starting those memories for her.
Oh yes, they're very sweet experiences.
Aw. Now for me, I saw, the local companies put on the Nutcracker and then saw Giselle in Swan Lake. But for me, it was when I saw the Russian ballet come to town and they did Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, that's a beautiful one.
Yes, my husband surprised me and got tickets for Valentine's Day. So we went and I'd never seen the Russian ballet, just American companies or local companies. And immediately I could tell the difference. And
it's beautiful.
Yes, it was just like your daughter. I just had my mouth open. It was breathtaking. Feel the beauty, the music, of course. But it was the pas de deux, the balcony scene, that just put me over the edge. I was just bawling by the time that was over. People just don't realize how ballet is so different in that they are artists, but they're also athletes. It's so athletic.
But it is. Yeah, I was actually shocked when, backstage, the ballerinas would go back there and they would be just dripping sweat and they'd be trying to catch their breath. And it's just, you don't even think about how much goes into it, how much energy and everything.
Exactly. That's interesting that you mentioned the breathing, because they're taught not to breathe when they're out there. They can't huff and puff when they're out there. They try as hard as they can not to show their chest going in and out. So there's a discipline there. So when they do go backstage, they can finally breathe,
Yes. I'm sure that feels nice.
Yeah. I can't even imagine doing all those jumps and, leaps and twists and turns. And when they stop, and the people are clapping and they have to just freeze and look like they're not out of breath. I can't even imagine that.
Honestly, I'm completely in awe of ballet dancers, especially the more I researched, the more stunned and just impressed I was by them.
Mm-hmm, me too. It is so absolutely amazing. The discipline, the artistry, the years of working at it, blood, sweat, and tears that goes into it. And you can always tell the ballerinas and the male ballet dancers who, it's almost like a calling, you can just tell that they're called because they're so passionate about it. So tell us about some of the research. What did you discover when you did your research for a year?
Well, I read a lot about specific ballet dancers who lived in the Victorian period. I was kind of shocked how little money they were able to make. And most of them were washerwomen on the side or, some other profession. They were very poor. And if they were ever going to make it in ballet, they had to have somebody sponsoring them. Mm-hmm. And these were gentlemen who were married, but, wanted a little bit something else on the side. And so they would sponsor these women and keep them in apartments and things like that. And I was just shocked that all of this stuff went on. And just the costumes that they wore even were incredibly hard to dance in. Just the things that they had to deal with to dance ballet surprised me quite a bit. And there were, fire dangers because they wore flammable costumes and, they really, really injured their bodies. And by about 35, they could sometimes barely walk because they weren't so focused back then on, waiting to let children go end point for, long enough or things like that until they grew. So they really did a lot of damage to their bodies. So when you say it's a calling, it certainly must have been for these women.
Yeah, they weren't doing it to get rich and famous, were they?
Mm-mm.
Wow.
No.
How did you incorporate all that into your story, A Midnight Dance?
Well, my heroine is patterned a little bit after Marie Taglioni, who was a famous dancer back then. And she was known for being more modest. A lot of the dancers from the continent were flashy, a little bit risque, sensual, and things like that. She made a name for herself, standing out as almost like an ethereal being. She wore kind of white, very simple costumes, and her dancing was phenomenal, but it wasn't necessarily quite as showy. She just was extremely talented. And so my heroine decided to kind of do a more moralistic road to ballet and not have a sponsor and just try to become the best she could be and go on the strength of her talent. She dressed simply. She put flowers in her hair and things like that instead of jewels. And she was a little bit afraid of standing out and, you know, not being on par with everyone else. But in the end, it served her best to stand out and do something a little different.
Now, your story has a bit of a ghost twist to it. So what made you want to do like a haunted or kind of touch on a ghost story within your story?
Oh, I'm always fascinated by having like a little trace of a ghost story. Nothing too heavy or dark or anything like that, but just kind of that mystery element of like, you know, what's going on, kind of a gothic feel. I love the old abandoned buildings, and I love kind of like forgotten stories that echo through the walls, people's pasts and things like that. And it just lends itself to, you know, a little taste of a ghost story. But especially since the supposed ghost is her mother, there's a direct connection to the heroine there.
Oh,
it made it a lot more fun.
That's neat when there's a twist like that. Oh, I love that. So tell us a little bit about the hero. Is there a hero in this story?
There are two heroes. There's when she first comes on the scene, she's about 14 or 15, and she's not a ballet dancer yet. She's learned from her mother, and she's dancing while the ballet is going on down below. She's dancing up in the attic. And this lead dancer finds her. He's in full costume. And he comes up there and he talks to her and spends time with her. And they dance together. And he is so impressed by her dancing that he says, you know, one day you'll be dancing opposite me on the stage. You know, I'm the principal dancer. So that means you will be a lead someday. And she gets so fascinated by that promise that she kind of hangs her hat on it and decides to focus on it. And she really, really works hard to fulfill that promise. And so she's just smitten by this guy who was so kind to her and everything like that. But then there is also when she comes back to the theater many years later, the theater flirt kind of takes a liking to her. And that really bothers her because she's trying very hard to keep a solid reputation and trying to catch the eye of the principal dancer who doesn't recognize her anymore. But she feels like if she's hanging around too much with this theater flirt, he's going to assume that, you know, she's taken or, you know, she's smitten with him. So it's kind of a battle between the two of these men, and the theater flirt ends up being not a terrible guy. And so the two of them kind of vie for being her hero.
Very nice. I really like that.
Yes. Well, the theater flirt ended up being a very fun, full of life character to write. He was just...
It's fun when characters come alive like that, isn't it?
Yes, I certainly wasn't expecting him to, but he lit up the page for me.
Yeah, it's always pleasant when things become easy to write.
Yes.
Well, this is just great. I'm just so excited for you. When does this book release?
It actually came out September 7th.
Oh, that's great. This week. Woohoo! Mm-hmm. So excited for you. Well, I can hardly wait to pick up my copy because I just adore the ballet. So when I saw the cover, which is so dreamy, I just love the cover. I thought, oh, I hope she can come on my podcast.
Oh, Ravel came up with a beautiful cover. I just love it.
It is. It's just perfect. Oh, great. Well, I wish you all the best of success. And thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule.
Oh, it's my pleasure, honestly. I love to sit and chat books.
Oh, good. I'll have to have you on again and we can talk about your book some more.
Anytime.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was so much fun to talk with Joanna Davidson-Politano about her new book, A Midnight Dance. And to learn more about who she is and what she writes. And I think this was my very first mommy and baby interview. The cooing you heard was her little baby, Oliver. Isn't that sweet? I hope that you've been encouraged by listening to Joanna, and never give up on your writing journey. Make sure you're going forward, writing something every day on this writing journey. And until next time, God bless.